And now I will call the March 14th meeting of the Ag Finance and Policy Committee to order. This is a remote meeting. It will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
Chair Sundin.
Here.
Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R. present.
Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J. present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick present.
Representative Miller, excused. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Thompson. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Representative Hansen J., I'm assuming that you've examined the minutes of the last meeting. Can I have a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions or corrections on those minutes? Seeing none, hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Aye. Okay, the motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Okay, last year we made some progress in the area of emerging farmers, and I wanted to use some time today to hear from the department on their work and what's been accomplished since last session. After the update, we'll hear from Vice Chair Vang on two of her bills that would have an impact on emerging farmers and others. So with us, we have Assistant Commissioner Bailey. We'll start with you and hear about the Emerging Farmers Annual Report. This is a legislatively mandated report, which was provided to members and is posted on the committee website. So a report from the Emerging Farmers Working Group. We have about 40 minutes blocked for this, including time for questions. Assistant Commissioner Bailey, please introduce yourself for the record and begin.
Yes, thank you, Chair Sundin. My name is Patrice Bailey, Assistant Commissioner here at the Department of Agriculture. Emerging Farmers is in my portfolio, and I am ready to give a report about the about emerging farmers. Since 2019 to where we are today, we have done listening sessions. We have had an emerging farmer working group installed. And since that time, we've also last year had a emerging farmer office. And so we are very fortunate for that. And just to give you an update as to where we are, next slide. So 2021, as you know, we're still in the pandemic. It's definitely been a hard time for farmers in general, especially last year in regards to the drought, but also in regards to emerging farmers overall. And we've definitely have been working with different groups to make sure that we are working together, because there are lots of different emerging farmers out there, but not all of them are consolidated. And we want to make sure that with this new office and the coordinator that we have, Lillian Ortenio, who you'll hear from next, we can be able to talk about, you know, some of the opportunities that have come. Next slide. Okay, so as we know that based on the 2017 census, the ag census, that we've had 39 black farmers, and we know that that number is a lot higher due to the other emerging farmers that we've heard about around the state and different groups that have emerging farmers within them. Despite that, you know, we're still dealing with issues regarding land and finances. And out of 25 million acres that we have in Minnesota, 23 of those million of those acres are owned by white farmers. And we're still dealing with disparities in regards to the percentages when it comes to farms owned by BIPOC farmers, but also the percentage of the farms that we have in Minnesota still remain low. So the number of 0.03% have remained steady as we've gone into the last 3 years. So we're hoping to have some movement on that particular front there. Next slide. One of the things that I'm going to touch on, and then I'm going to have Lillian Otenio sort of expand upon this, is that we've had some really awesome activities with our working group members. We've had some members term off, meaning that we had some that were there for the first year, termed off, and then we had received applications, 40 of them, in fact, for 9 different spots last September. And so our working group is moving in a robust fashion, but these are some of the different activities. We've had the opportunity for a particular grant, the Local Food Purchasing Assistant Cooperative Agreement Grant. And so this particular grant, you know, we would like to, is designed to support local farmers and socially disadvantaged farmers. The program was created by the American Rescue Plan, and the idea is for it to provide funding to state government and tribal governments to cover procurement and distribution. And so only one particular agency can apply, and MDA is that agency that has been applying. So we've been able to have meetings with the working group members to discuss opportunities. We've also been doing quite a bit of team building with the Emerging Farmer Working Group and the facilitator, Michael Burchard. We wanted to make sure that there were some sessions that Michael was able to meet with the working group on team building that did not include MDA staff. And so that was a good thing, because people felt that they were able to talk about some of the disparities that they're dealing with within their own communities, but also ways and recommendations that would make MDA better in the programming that we have. Since the last legislative session and the office, then we was able to obtain the Emerging Farmer Office, there's been several speaking engagements that Lillian would talk about, but we haven't even formally had the opportunity to launch this particular office just yet. However, the opportunities of speaking engagements for and emerging farmers have been through the roof. We've had some conversations with Hennepin County Commissioner Angela Connolly on opportunities within Hennepin County when it comes to land and emerging farmers, and want to work with MDA and emerging farmers on ways in which we can be able to focus on that particular piece. The other opportunities have been working with FFA and 4-H, as well as the Minnesota Agriculture Rural Leadership class, to talk about the office. So the office has definitely been in a space of good stead so far. So there's lots to talk about in terms of speaking engagements. We can go to the next slide. So the barriers that emerging farmers continue to experience are the same that are on this list, and this is just 26 of them. These are barriers that were identified during our listening sessions that we took 26 of the most talked about barriers that emerging farmers continue to have in terms of a common theme. And the one that I always want to pick out is land and people feeling overlooked. But we've been dealing with a lot of issues around having FBM, farm business management, in the metro. I am pleased to say that working with Central Lakes College and Keith Olander, we are in the process of hiring someone for a farm business management instructor in the metro. There's opportunities in terms of there's issues around healthcare and lack of insurance. So a lot of the issues that we continue to see emerging farmers continue to deal with still is prevalent, no matter if you're living in the metro or you're living in outstate Minnesota. These barriers seem to have a common theme across the board. Next slide. So some of the recommendations that that we had last, the last time we had testified was increasing the microloan program, the pilot microloan program from 10,000 to 20,000. That was established. We've been working with NRCS and not only different payment programs, but we've also been working with them in terms of emerging farmers, you know, just to make sure that we are providing other resources in regards to emerging farmers. And the other thing about the recommendations that is not on this slide is we had talked about looking at having this office be more of a repository when it comes to data. That's one thing that the USDA does not keep the data on emerging farmers in Minnesota to make sure that we know where people are, for one, and how many emerging farmers are in the state. So that's something that we're recommending that NDA sort of be the sort of that one repository for the data so that we can continue to update the committee on how emerging farmers continue to grow. At this point, I would like to bring in Lillian Otenio. I'm proud to say that Lillian Otenio joined us as the only and first emerging farmer outreach coordinator for this particular office. And she's going to talk about the update from the inception of the office to where we are today. So I would like to welcome her, and she's going to give an update.
Welcome to the committee, Lillian Otenio. Please identify yourself, describe what you do, and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all the members here present. My name is Lillian Otieno, and I am the outreach and actually outreach and engagement coordinator for the new Emerging Farmer Office at the MDA. Next slide, please. So the vision for of the Emerging Farmer Office was created by the Emerging Farmers Working Group members, overall to address equity and justice in agriculture for all. So one, they felt that this office should be a one-stop shop for farmers looking to start a farm business. So this office should liaise with the other MDA divisions to make sure that we are responsive to those needs. Secondly, we should be listening. This office should be listening and engaging with farmers to inform, to help inform the structure, evolution, and also the development of this office. Third, making sure that we are addressing the language barriers from inception, development, and delivery of services and information. And as a matter of fact, at this point, I think I should also mention that there's a lot of groups that are also collecting and forming based on the fact that we now have this office and they feel there is a place that they can go to directly at the MDA beyond going, figuring out which department or program to reach out to. One of those groups that are forming is the African Growers, Africa Growers Association, which I know will be testifying also at in one of the sessions coming up, I think on Wednesday. That group formed together because they felt there was a need for African immigrant farmers to be heard. And they have this office to come to and see whether we can also make sure that we are listening to them and helping to advocate for them. One of the other visions for this office is to assist farmers to navigate public-private partnerships, and that is next slide, please. To navigate public-private partnerships, collaborating with allies and stakeholders who are interested in sharing their expertise and resources with emerging farmers, and also making sure internally that we have that cross-agency collaboration and connections. Both internal and external, because as farmers, not just emerging farmers, there's touch points with other agencies on various needs or requirements in being a farmer. Next slide, please. So part of one of the huge things or the important things that we want to make sure and based out of the working group members and also emerging farmers in general is the need to make sure that we have communication, relevant communication and updates that goes out to farmers. And so one of the ways that we are doing this in this office is to have this newsletter that we do send out to all those who sign up, as well as the emerging farmers that we have either in the working group or anyone else who is interested in receiving updates. This is just one method. This is a new office. We are developing other communication tools that we hope will help in terms of making sure that we are staying connected with emerging farmers. Next slide, please. We've had a lot of engagement opportunities, like Assistant Commissioner Bailey pointed out. I will not repeat the ones that he highlighted. One of the ones I think I want to mention is working closely with our tribal liaison, Shannon Kessner, in working with tribal nations. So we've had opportunities to engage with Fond du Lac, as well as White Earth Nation recently at the Indigenous Farming Conference. We've also engaged with communities like The Village, who are situated in Rochester, Minnesota. They have a lot of emerging farmers that they work with in that group who are looking for land, who are also interested in translation and interpretation services, as well as other issues that impact emerging farmers. Next slide, please. We talked about cross-agency collaborations. I will just mention that one of the agencies that we are working closely with is DEED, because they are the economic development agency for our state, and looking to see how we can make sure that agriculture is a viable economic opportunity for emerging farmers as well. Next slide, please. What are some of those challenges and opportunities that we are hearing from emerging farmers? Assistant Commissioner Bailey talked about the need for data. We do need data. We do need to figure out how we can collect that data to help inform how we develop programs, processes, and procedures, but also just to know exactly where are these farmers, where do they exist, and what are some of their other needs that we may not be aware of. The challenges are grant programs to address resources to purchase land, financial assistance for infrastructure improvements on either rented or owned land. Technical assistance is huge. I think all of you will agree that sometimes the language or the wording can be a little bit too confusing or a little bit too technical for folks to try and navigate. And also internally at the MDA, wanting to make sure some of those challenges are, we are sort of siloed, and that is not just indicative of only MDA, but I think a lot of agencies or organizations. So wanting to make sure that we look at how we can collaborate internally as well to make sure that we can serve these farmers effectively. Next slide. So what are we doing? What do we have ongoing? It's a one-person office. We do have a little bit of help here and there, but there's a lot that we could be doing well. However, we are focusing on those conversations on land access. We are focusing on conversations on how we can gather data. We are focusing on how we can address the issues related to capital, translation, and also technical assistance. And in this office, working on those communication materials, trying to develop either a plan or a route on how we can have impact between fiscal year 22 to 25 when that working group sunsets, and also making sure we are continuing to champion the needs of emerging farmers, both internally and externally with stakeholders and decision makers. And Commissioner Bailey did talk about the Farm Business Management Instructor position that we're very excited about. We this office had a lot of work in that as well, and conversations, as well as a farm advocate to work with farmers within the metro areas, which is where a lot of the emerging farmers are also concentrated. And that RFP, we're still working on it. We did put it out. We had some feedback, and we are going back again using that feedback to rebrand that and figure out how we can attract more talent or resources to be able to help in that area. Next slide. And thank you. That is all I have. And thank you for having me. And I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Jansen Hang from the department to talk about the Emerging Farmers Working Group.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Chair Sundin, Vice Chair Vang, and members of the committee. Once again, my name is Jansen Hang, and I am the Executive Director with the Hmong American Farmer Association, but at the same time, I'm also an Emerging Farming Working Group member. I have been with the Emerging Farming Working Group here since it was established here in 2021 here. But just kind of give you a little background of who I am as well, too. You know, as executive director, I actually sit and kind of co-founded the Hmong American Farmer Association, a membership-based organization that was created to advance the economic prosperity of Hmong farming families in Minnesota through capacity building, strategic partnership, cooperative endeavors, community engagement, and also advocacy work, right, to spur intergenerational and community wealth. And the incorporation of HAFL is to kind of establish and address the inequity that exists among Hmong farmers, as they are such an integral component to our local food system. But yet Hmong farmers were faced with challenges with lack of access to land, markets, training, credit, and capital. Right? And so these challenges were addressed through HAFL, was to kind of seek alternative solutions, and which we saw through was a whole food model that states that all aspects of the food and farming industry must be simultaneously and freely accessible to build intergenerational and community wealth. And so if you have heard from Assistant Commissioner Bailey and also Lillian here, that you know the number of emerging farmers are growing in Minnesota in the hundreds and thousands. Of course, if you don't have accurate number, because based on the census here was a little outdated compared to what it is now. But at the same time, that we also need to prepare ourselves with staffings here and resources in the creation of a vibrant food system, and also to grow the next generation of farmers, right? And so that these challenges that, you know, Hmong farmers had faced relative to land access, markets beside the farmers market system, credit, capitals, trainings, you know, are also challenges that are encountered by all emerging farmers, young, beginning farmers, immigrant, minorities, and BIPOC farmers. And so it was so critical, and thank you all here for all your support that in the establishment of the Emerging Farming Working Group, right, that it was created to provide resource and equitable opportunities for emerging farmers so that they can grow themselves and grow sustaining vibrant farming operations. And so as mentioned here, that the Emerging Farmer Group is still is in infant stage. So we have definitely learned a lot from the over the course of the years, but definitely we are making great headways, right, to understand the needs of all farmers from both the urban setting and as well as rural setting, you know, to at the same time to kind of address the needs across divisions between state and also county entities, you know, and also among community-based organizations where HAFA and 43 other community-based organizations are working together here to create equitable resources for our farming. But all of that is truly at the nexus of the Emerging Farming Working Group and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And so, you know, I will keep it short. So I really want to kind of thank you for all that, that we have made great progress here. As Lillian, as well as Assistant Commissioner Bailey has expressed, and I don't want to be redundant here, but for the most part, I really want to thank you for your support. But at the same time, I want to also urge you for your continued support in the Minnesota Department of Agriculture Emerging Farming Working Group here to provide more adequate staffing here so that not just Lillian, but there are multiple other staff here that can address the entire need of the state and emerging farmers, but also to provide resources to grow their capacities and funding to allow opportunities that they can seek land ownership. Right, they can obtain new markets, or they can create, you know, they can acquire equitable access to training, such as like bicultural, bilingual training to address the vast need and diversity that exists in Minnesota. And also the financial support here, you know, so that they can run a vibrant farming operation. Right? And a lot of those are addresses with what Assistant Commissioner Bailey and also Lynn had mentioned about, you know, relative to like microloans and grant with this piloting of mini grants here that would support many emerging farmers, especially with the rollout of the Food Safety Modernization Act or the produce safety here, where now they're requiring here that all water be tested, but that's a fairly a nuances, right? That especially for emerging farmer where they never had resources or have a deep understanding of how to obtain this, and now they can, through some of these programs that are actually being rolled out through the support of the Emerging Farming Working Group here. And clearly to provide technical assistance so that we can truly, truly, you know, sustain a vibrant food system, but also to truly grow the next generations of farmers in the state of Minnesota here. So I really want to thank you for this opportunity here and want to kind of share back about what we learned over the course of the years. And that, you know, Nexus and the Emerging Farm Working Group is truly the nexus to build a vibrant Minnesota here as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. It's a lot of good information in the last couple of testifiers here. But, you know, 180 years ago or whatever it might be, when Minnesota had more farmland than farmers, that was quite the situation. And we had the Homestead Act to help us out and fill the state with productive people. Now we have a lot of productive people, you know, willing to be productive and not enough land to go around. I'm just wondering, are, you know, some of the BIPOC groups or anyone else engaged in possibly forming co-ops to buy up some land so they can practice their customary gardening and farming exercises. What's going on that front? Is, you know, what specifically are people doing to get on the land? To either of the testifiers, Lillian Otano or just Jensen Hang?
I can provide some comment there, Chair.
Please, Ms. Otano.
Thank you. I think what I have engaged or through this office, I'm aware mm-hmm. that a lot of emerging farmers, some who, and you know, that definition is broad to include folks who have been in agriculture, but have not really been in scope with some of the resources or services that are provided, both federal and maybe state or local. So some of those folks who are also emerging farmers are collecting together and either offering incubation models for those who are interested in agriculture, other farmers who want to get into agriculture, so that they have that little space to come in, either train or have that, you know, get started while they try and look for land. And these guys are, you know, they're amazing. I'm always at awe at the work that they're doing. I know this one emerging farmer, Moses Momani, who has actually been able to find land to rent at Lino Lakes, at Cochrane. He's looking at St. Francis and looking at other areas, and really for other farmers to be able to have a place to go and farm. Now, in terms of purchasing land, that's a whole different ballgame, because there's a lot of other barriers there. In terms of, you know, capital, you know, where's the capital for them to do that? So they are working in and of themselves to try and address some of those challenges, but they certainly do need our help in being able to navigate some of those financial or capital challenges that they're experiencing. If we, you know, there's the land access piece that you mentioned. Yes, that land doesn't exist. And so we are also, you know, what I presented earlier in talking to looking at what Hennepin County has to offer in terms of where those lands are available, and if at all they are farmable lands, and therefore these groups or communities can go ahead and maybe look at the possibilities of having those lands available to farm.
Thank you. I see Representative Lippert has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is for Ms. Otieno as well. Related to data collection, are there efforts underway at the department to collect that data? If so, could you describe what that would look like? And you know, if not, what needs to happen? Or, you know, are there gaps in the data collection work that might be ongoing?
Ms. Latino.
So thank you for that question. So beyond the Ag Census data, which of course I'm sure you're all familiar, is not very conclusive in terms of capturing all the farmers that we're trying to assist here for various reasons, which I don't think we have time to go into why maybe these farmers or these folks don't feel comfortable identifying that they exist and that they're interested in this work. But internally at the MDA, we have various programs, right? And so it's this office collaborating with the other programs like the produce program when they do their survey for the Food Safety Modernization Act produce safety program, and trying to figure out, okay, do you have farmers who, you know, emerging farmers that you have collected that, you know, you have data that we can actually use to kind of identify where these farmers are. And Mr. you know, Jensen Hang did mention the complexity of trying to figure out where those data points are. So we have our own internal programs collecting their own data, but we don't have one repository that we can actually go to and say, this data represents emerging farmers. We do need resources, we need FTEs, we need an opportunity to develop that and to do it well, to work with stakeholders and actually the Emerging Farmers Working Group, as well as the farmers themselves, to help us figure out where the farmers are. We do have other programs. You know, there's a cooperative survey that is ongoing right now, but that is a totally different program. We worked with that group to make sure that the questions that they were asking in that survey would provide us some data that could be useful for us in this office to figure out where these farmers are and how we can address their needs.
Representative Lippert, any follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. So, Ms. Otieno, what I hear you saying is that you need, as the Emerging Farmers Working Group, you really need to gather that data for emerging farmers in particular, and you need some FTEs or some resources to make sure that you're doing that well. I've had some conversations or presented a bill on like local foods and regional food systems and gathering that data and a report for that. But I hear you saying, especially for emerging farmers, you need data collection that's working for your initiatives in particular. Am I hearing you correctly?
Ms. Otena?
Yeah, I would agree that, so, thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairman. I would agree, and thank you, Representative, for that question. I would agree, yes, we need that because there's unique needs for these farmers. But I would suggest that that data would not only be useful to our office, but I think it would really be useful to the entire agency in so many other areas. And like I said, emerging farmers run across, you know, the gamut from farm to what I call farm to fork. You know, we have growers, we have producers, we have value-added folks, we have folks who have mixed operations. So I believe that data will be useful to the entire agency, not just this office.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it seems like we have two ships passing in the night here. One is that is focusing on what is needed, and then the other is what is happening. And, you know, I think there needs to be engagement with the banking community, the auctioneers, the estate lawyers, you know, just a number. I was at a land auction about 3 weeks ago. It was a farmland auction. It had a building site. It had a house. It was poor land. That was a sealed bid auction with a bid off. And the bid off began at a value higher, much higher than the Compeer loan rate, that loan that would be given for that property. And the land actually went for twice as much, almost twice as much as what Compeer would lend to. This is not uncommon. So there's also land sales and land transactions that occur that don't even go public, that are when a farmer dies, it's probably, or a landowner dies in rural Minnesota or at rural America, they're going to be, the family's going to be visited by people who want that property quickly. And you get a lot of money floating around here. So I think we have to look as policymakers at what we do. So when there is cash that comes from the federal government or the state government, that's used as cash for land sales. And when the cash is provided on a per acre basis, it means the big get bigger. And we move towards a feudal society where the only way to get into agriculture is to be born into it. And that's not what we should be doing. So the work you're doing on demonstrating the need is really important. But how land moves in our state, in our country, how land moves in 2022 versus how land used to be, is very, very different. And what happens is there's a de facto exclusion of new places and new purchases because those who have get, and those who don't even know what's happening in the availability of land. And we have to crack that open so that there's more opportunity. And that means dealing with the lenders, dealing with bankers, dealing with the estates, dealing with lawyers, and then taking a good look at ourselves in terms of how we provide aid, both in terms of direct cash, but also in tax law. Because the tax laws that we pass relating to property and estates and agriculture ensure that we continue land moving within the families, but don't allow new families to come in unless they marry or born into. You're doing good work. It's just there's a whole nother piece of this that we have to engage in. And I, you know, I'm willing to help you on that. It's, but we better start talking about it because it's the big money. And one final thing, with our tax policies, you can sell real estate and then buy farmland to park your money for tax purposes. So that's another investment, outside investment that comes in that prevents new farmers, but it could be used for a new opportunity for getting people into agriculture and having a diversified communities as well as diversified agriculture.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Did you, are you trying to elicit a response from the testifiers?
From the testifiers, if they're aware of this whole land movement, how land sells and how, and if there's any way of engaging with the estate lawyers, the lenders, the bankers, and the auctioneers.
Okay, Ms. Otena, Care to respond?
I think I'll defer my comments to Assistant Commissioner Bailey, if that's okay, Chairman.
Commissioner Bailey, please.
Yes, I want to say thank you so much to Chair Hansen for actually bringing that need up, because you know you have brought up the whole issue around what's needed and what's happening. I think the other barrier is the information barrier of information in order for people to even know that the auction is there in order to demonstrate the need. One of the things that we are working with is, of course, we have our farmland program, which is in a process of being updated so it could be able to accommodate more people. But, you know, there's an issue in Minnesota for those who are renters versus those who actually own land. And that particular number is not equal, it's not even. But we are looking through this office and through MDA is looking at forming relationships, which we have been with Commerce and Deed and other agencies in order to help us get the data so that we can be able to know where farmers are throughout the state. We have a map that's located in the report that talks about where the emerging farmers that we have on the working group are located. But if you look at that map, everything that's along the west part of the state is blank. Not to say that they're not emerging farmers. We don't have the data to actually quantify the fact that you know, emerging farmers are all over the state. And we want to make sure that their voices are heard. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you much. Good discussion here today. Representative Thompson, please. You're on mute. Representative Thompson, you're muted.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Thompson, you're muted. Can you hear me now?
Great, thank you.
Can you hear me now? How about now?
Yes.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you.
Chair Hansen, actually, thank you. Some of those words I'm going to say, I can stop. I don't have to waste time. But the reality is this money actually doesn't trickle down to BIPOC communities. Honestly, that's the other piece. Like, but the community comes here to these committees and they ask for money. And these resources, they'll ask for money. And a lot of times we tell them no. Commissioner Bailey, also, like, I honestly have for like the past 3 years tried to find out how many Black farmers we have here in this state. And I've only been able to find 3 in this state. The other piece, Chair Sundin, is the ability to navigate this paperwork in order to get the resources. These communities that are honestly always getting this money, they don't have the ability or I'm talking about when we talk about BIPOC and honestly to be in BIPOC, that money never trickles down to the Black community. And so we don't have any farmers or emerging farmers or any resources for emerging farmers. So it looks sexy on paper. But in actuality, Old MacDonald doesn't have a farm here. And we used to sing that to our kids. And that's the truth. Like, Old MacDonald, that Black man don't own a farm. Like, I cannot find but 3. And so I honestly would like to connect with Commissioner Bailey also. But what Chair Hansen said also made sense. Like, resources that would actually create. And so we don't need another working group. Like, we need a group to go to work. Because at the end of the day, like, our kids, these career pathways have been ripped away from our kids. And so I know if our kids can see it, they can be it. And these are career pathways. This is something that I'm passionate about. So pardon my brash delivery, but this is something that I'm passionate about because Chair Sundin, these people are calling me and emailing me. And I'm talking about organizations within the African-American community. But we're figuring out a way to incarcerate our kids. We're figuring out a way to, because when they can't eat, they'll go out and steal the food. You know, people like feeding our future. You know, they know how to navigate this paperwork all the time and navigate the system to where the dollars that were meant for the BIPOC community doesn't really come to our community. And I mean this, everything I'm saying with love. So I would like to create like a conversation about what BIPOC really means. Because at the end of the day, like everybody will come, but the African-American community, African immigrant community will come, and these organizations walk away with crumbs. But we're honestly seeing the result of not investing in these communities. And so that's the important message that I was trying to bring today. But what Chair Hansen said also is systemic. It's systemic. And, you know, if I'm not here in the committee chair, nobody will say that, you know, because this stuff looks real good on paper. But in reality, like our community is suffering actually from lack of knowledge, because we don't even know how to navigate these resources, even when they come to our community. So that's something that I like to connect with the commissioner about, you know, in a further discussion, you know, offline.
Okay. I guess we have resources available to help you address those concerns now. And I'd encourage you to talk with Commissioner Otaino and others to hopefully get something moving, you know, with your concerns, Representative Thompson.
Yeah, they should be shining on the billboard.
I get it. Thank you for your input. It's always terrific. and appreciated. Okay, any other questions or comments for our testifiers? Okay, thank you. Hearing none, Vice Chair Vang, you have House File 3263. This is a finance bill. We're going to end up laying this over. We have about 20 minutes or so blocked out for this. Vice Chair Vang, if you would like to, please move your bill and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move my bill, House File 3263, to be laid over possible inclusion. What my bill does is it takes aim at the heart of the issue of what we've been talking about, land access. This is a bill that I feel strongly about. We've heard from farmers across the state how to access land is often a critical barrier towards becoming a farmer. With an average age of a farmer being 56 years old, we will experience, if we haven't already, workforce issues on our most critical need for our food system. And we will need to build the next generation of farmers. This is meant to target experienced small-scale farmers who need that extra push to become a farmer to own land and sustain their farming business. This bill will appropriate $3 million to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for farmland down payment assistance grants of up to $15,000 per eligible farmer. This bill defines eligible farmers as Minnesota residents who are purchasing a farm, will provide the majority of the day-to-day farm management and physical labor, earn no more than $250,000 per year in gross sales from farm products, and have not, nor has their spouse previously had a direct or indirect ownership interest in the farmland. An eligible farmer will be required to match the down payment assistance grant with at least equivalent amount of other funding. And there is a one-to-one match required to receive this funding. And the bill requires grant recipients to repay a prorated share of the grant if the recipient does not own or farm the land for at least 5 years. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will yield my time for my testifiers to elaborate why this bill is important.
Okay, to the testifiers, Vang Tao, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Name's Vang Tao. I work in the ag sector for a little close to 15 years now and grew up in a family of farmers. You know, spent some time working with USDA Farm Service Agency as a project tech to being a relationship manager for Northwest Farm Credit Services, supporting businesses in the northern parts of America, to running a farmer's market operation in Washington State, to also building agricultural programs for nonprofits in Minnesota. So did that for a little while, and I continue to stay in the governmental sector, but also an aspiring peony farmer. So I want to be a peony farmer down the road. So So this bill will really kind of support the effort for someone like me to invest in ag real estate so that I could do my production on a long-term basis. I think as some of these testifiers before me kind of spoken, land access is a hard thing to obtain, but having a support or a down payment assistance could help out with the long-term investments would really help sustain agriculture in Minnesota. As we, most of us know, in the agricultural sector, it's a long-term investment. You know, it might even take certain generations to really build a sustainable model. But in order to do so, you have to own the ag real estate. That way you can continue to be innovative. And that way you can take time to find a sustainable model that works for you. And, you know, without the land, having the land or owning the land, I mean, there could be farmers like me who will own the rent the land for a year or two, might even get a grant from USDA. But then without the long-term access to land, I might have to pay back that grant because I didn't meet the grant outcomes of that many years. So to really invest in the agriculture sector for small farmers or aspiring farmers like myself, having ownership of the land really prolongs the ability to be innovative and to be able to sustain as an ag producer. So that's kind of what I have.
Okay, thank you. Next testifier is Tara Schulte. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Taya Schulte, and I own and operate an urban farm here in Minneapolis called Growing Lots. And Growing Lots has been around since 2011, and I became an urban farmer after about 5 years of commuting to rural land to the, you know, space that I rented, and really was like, you know, the hour and a half commute to and from farmland isn't sustainable. So housing is a big issue when it comes to having access to farmland. So I became an urban farmer because that's the land that I had access to. So we've, we have been really lucky in being able to hold on to long-term leases here in Minneapolis, but they're running out. I probably won't have those leases next year even. So I'm looking back at over a decade of work that has been done of, you know, we've built a business that sustains like me and my partner financially. We've even collaborated and worked with other young farmers to get them started on farming businesses, and have done a lot of things. But like over those 10 years, I thought that the urban farming could be a jumping off point for us to expand, build our businesses, and then like get long-term permanent tenure on land that we own. And after 10 years of navigating all these systems, we still don't have any viable way to buy land. And what we keep on coming up against is like so much that has already been mentioned about, you know, the USDA loans don't really apply to us. It doesn't trickle down to us because, you know, a lot of times we're looking at land, you know, if we want to go cooperatively on a land, we're looking at large sections of land that maybe doesn't have housing on it, and the FSA loans don't. You have to have housing on the lands to get those loans, or the loans or the places that do come up with housing are usually, you know, maybe don't even go on the market because they're sold through families, or if they do have housing, they're, you know, like $500,000 over, you know, anything that like a young farmer could afford. And so I guess I just want to testify as like somebody who has made a career of building farm businesses and have mentored others in the urban setting who are, you know, disadvantaged about, like, you know, we don't have inherited wealth. We don't have ties to rural communities to access this land. And after, you know, over a decade of working with other farmers and taking all the resources we can possibly get, we still are finding that it's like insurmountable to find land. And this bill is really exciting because it seems like one of the first bills that I've seen that like directly would, you know, make some of those fundings trickle down to a lot of the farmers who are trying so hard to establish and build, you know, a sustainable food economy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We also have department staff on hand for questions. From the committee, any questions to the author or the testifiers? Okay. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang, just a couple of questions on your bill. How would the grants be handed out? You say up to $15,000. How would that be determined? Who would get what size of grant?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. So it is required that the farmers do provide their own match funding to receive this grant. And so if, you know, farmers are able to match $15,000, they can get up to $15,000 on that end. And I think and there are other requirements on what is you need to, you know, to be considered eligible, such as you can't make more than, you know, $250,000 in gross sales. You haven't really owned farmland before. So those are some of the benchmarks of what we will go towards into that. And if you have any suggestions, I'm open to hearing them too as well.
Okay. Follow up, Representative Anderson.
Yeah, thank you again, Mr. Chair. So if I understand correctly, the grant would kind of match what the recipient would have available from his own funding. And typically when you purchase land and use a bank, the bank requires at least 20% as a down payment. So this would kind of limit the amount that would be available to be loaned to the grant recipient. And, you know, it could, and that would have to be collateral as well. So would these funds be, in your opinion, be allowable collateral that a bank would say, yeah, this matches your 20% down payment and it would be okay to go with that? Is that your understanding?
Chair Vang?
Mr. Chair, I believe so. I think it is, this is a, you know, I know that I don't understand much of the lending process, but I know that, you know, banks do want to make sure that there is reduced risk in making these types of investments. And so if you know, they see if farmers are able to put a higher down payment or put more in equity, it does encourage banks to follow through with that sale and that investment. And I can also defer that with my testifier Vong, who has experience working in the lending sphere.
Hang on one second. I think we're going to get a little bit of help on this, Representative Anderson, from Mr. Tao. Mr. Tao, please.
Yep, thank you. The in the lending world, what the banks and how they finance is always trying to analyze risk. And to be able to collaborate this grant funding with the investment of the private owner, the owner's equity into the deal really minimizes the risk for this ag real estate lending. In typical times, they would also defer out to FSA for a guarantee. Some of these deals doesn't get FSA guaranteed. But it really also allows the borrower to obtain a higher amount of funding to get the ag real estate, because ag real estate is getting more and more expensive, and bank kind of has the fear of lending at a higher amount. Therefore, they have some sort of cap or some sort of limitation. I looked at a property down by Waseca down south, and I was looking to buy that property, and the bank says, you know what, Vong, even though this land costs about, I think, about $80,000 or something, you have to come in at $50,000 to make this purchase. I'm going, wait a minute, I don't have $50,000 sitting around. Therefore, I'm not going to move forward with that purchase. And because bank, based on the market price of the ag real estate that is today, bank kind of has some sort of limitation that they'll borrow up to. And having this down payment assistance will really minimize and mitigate that risk for the banks to take on this opportunity to lend to a borrower that wants ag real estate. I don't know if that kind of helps, but it's a riskier lending nowadays than before for ag real estate.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, any follow-up on this?
Yeah, I would fully agree that whatever type of terms are agreed to, it has to cash flow. You know, depending on how much money you put down, doesn't really matter if it doesn't cash flow. I don't think a bank or any institution would go along unless it would cash flow. One just final question. There is a provision here in the bill on the bottom of page one that if something would happen and the person who gets one of these grants doesn't farm the land for 5 years, would be a payback back to the state. And in the case of, let's say, a bankruptcy occurred, would the state be in a first position to have first call on whatever assets are left in this type of a situation with this kind of a grant program?
Chair Vang?
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Anderson, for your question. I can continue to have that discussion with you and to get that clarified if that's necessary or needed. I'm open to that. I think this is just a line that I added in there to make sure that those who are using taxpaying dollars are actual farmers farming the land for its intended use for up to 5 years, and there might be, unfortunate circumstances of bankruptcy or perhaps, farmer passes away and isn't able to be there for farm the land for 5 years. There's some, the state gets some of that money back. But if you want to clarify that further, I'm happy to have the discussion with you.
Okay, Representative Anderson, anything further?
Yeah, just a final comment. Yeah, I appreciate that, Representative. And farming is a capital-intensive venture, especially what's happening today with the prices of fertilizer and fuel and such. So we hope none of those things would happen, but they do happen in the world of agriculture. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the discussion today. Any further questions on House File 3263? Okay, seeing none. 3263 is laid over. Our last bill on the agenda is House File 4111. We heard a version of this last year and included it in our omnibus finance bill. Unfortunately, the Senate didn't think too much of it, but it's about cooperative grants. We have the rest of the committee for this bill. Vice Chair Vang, please move your bill and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like this is Representative Vang's bill day. So thank you for indulging in my bill hearings today. So House File 4111 is similar to the bill I carried last year, House File 1687. This bill will also reauthorize MDA to make grants to help producers develop cooperatives to process and market Minnesota-grown agriculture products. Producer-led cooperatives can help these producers develop the processing and marketing infrastructure needed to grow the market for these crops. This value-added work can also help producers earn more money for their products. Secondly, cooperative development is timely because many producers are becoming frustrated with the consolidation of our food system and want to build alternative models. This is particularly true during the wake of COVID-19. And cooperatives are an important tool to, that producers can use to build alternative markets for their farm products, such as the lack of local meat processing, for example, has been raised in this committee. Cooperative development is a tool we can use to help Minnesota producers innovate and build new models that better serve their farm businesses and communities. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would yield my time for my testifier.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I see a testifier by the name of Ben Penner. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I'm Ben Penner. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Ben Penner, and I'm a Kernza grower and a farmer and the vice president of the Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative, representing 27 members and approximately 1,200 acres of Kernza, a new forever green initiative crop. Our acres are located mostly in Minnesota. And I'm here today to register my strong support for this bill for HF 4111 and renewing cooperative grants, and to share the strong support of Minnesota Farmers Union. As a steering committee, we have been meeting for the past few years and organizing our cooperative mostly as volunteers. Under that, in the past year, we have incorporated as a cooperative under Minnesota Statute 308A, hired a marketing firm to represent us to potential buyers and began brokering sales on behalf of growers. Drafted bylaws that we are hoping to complete in the very near future, completed a feasibility study draft, and hosted three field days, as well as designed an inventory management protocol tracking growers' production farm by farm, launched a website, drafted membership and marketing agreements. So far, we've had to, we've been relying on grant funding for much of this, and there's a lot more to do. We need to complete a business planning process, a business and strategic planning process, and we've discussed this need with Cooperative Development Services, and our estimate is that this process would cost approximately $40,000. We also need to find funding and hire management staff to oversee operations and organizational development. Further, further development of the website and also marketing materials. Reauthorizing cooperative grants would help cooperatives like ours scale quickly. We'd be eager to apply for this grant as soon as it would go a long way toward helping us launch this critical business in service of our broader economic and environmental goals in Minnesota. Minnesota Farmers Union has submitted written testimony for you to review. Thank you to Vice Chair Vang, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Okay, we have an all-star lineup for help us with any questions here. We've got Stu Laurie with the Farmers Union, Paul Huguenin, and Ashley Bress from the department. So, any questions to the author or testifier at this point? Okay, I will go in once, go in twice. Gone. I will invite Stu Laurie from the Farmers Union to share some comments.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I do government relations for the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we're eager to share our support for this legislation, you know, to add on to what Vice Chair Vang said and what Ben shared. You know, I think this reauthorizing these grants is well-timed. We talk about a reauthorization because the department used to make grants to groups of farmers who wanted to form cooperatives to process or market Minnesota grown products. Those got taken out of law in the early 2000s. And we're really eager to see them reinstated with the disruption, particularly with COVID-19, but also with market concentration and problems with increasingly global supply chains. A lot of our members are looking for ways to market more of their product locally and to do more of their processing themselves, right? They feel like they can keep more of the food dollar and keep more of that food dollar in their local community as well. And so, you know, Ben's just one example, but we have members who are actively forming or seeking to form cooperatives around processing or marketing industrial hemp. We've got folks who want to grow seedlings to plant windrows, like Chair Hansen and Rep Lippert are proposing. And we've got members who want to join together to help solve our meat processing bottleneck. So a lot of examples. A central challenge for all these folks is getting the necessary pieces in place before those farmers can put their money on the table, right? And that includes some of the things that Ben still has yet to do, a feasibility study, a business plan, drafting bylaws, doing those early organizational pieces that are really critical to cooperative success. I need to find a place where I can look this up, but someone quoted me that it takes 10 years for a farm cooperative, the average farm cooperative, to get off the ground. Ben can nod a little bit, even with a lot of support and a lot of energy. You know, his has taken time, but you know, I think something like this can really help spur some of these farm businesses and would do a lot for the state, particularly in this moment. So thanks for the opportunity to share a couple thoughts of the extra time that we had, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments on 4111? Okay, there's also a letter of support for this bill in your packet. So I see no other questions or comments. Thank you, Vice Chair Vang. House File 4111 is laid over for possible inclusion. We're ahead of schedule a little bit, but nevertheless, we are adjourned. Thank you.